This material is subject to copyright. No unauthorized recording, editing, copying, or distribution is permitted without the consent of the Economic Research Council. All rights reserved. For more information, visit www.ercouncil.org. Audio lectures by the Economic Research Council.
Thank you all for coming. I won't talk about my awards just now, but what I will talk about is my columns, which I've been writing in the FT. And I guess the reason why I've been writing those is because I've been a journalist for about 3 years, and one of my the topics that I've been most passionate about is young people's finances. And I kind of found myself in this sort of crusty old world, and I was one of the only sort of young people in it. And that struck me as something quite unusual to me, and people found me quite unusual. So I was my first job was as a pensions reporter. So I started writing about young people's pensions, and that kind of led to me writing generally about young people's finances and the state of them. And that kind of led to the FT column really questioning whether my generation is one that is young, rootless and broke. And I think it is one of the biggest debates of our time, actually. I think, you know, at dinner parties, people are talking about this kind of thing. And I guess sort of everyone in the room probably knows or is themselves a young person with some financial worries, perhaps. So I think I'll start by saying one of the things about this debate is that all too often it's placed in the wrong frame. I don't think it's very helpful to pit generations against each other, as it's so easy to do with this topic, because there seems to be a generational divide, especially when we look at finances. It's very easy for my generation to look back at my parents' and grandparents' generation and say, they had it so easy, they've got their big gold-plated pensions and their big houses and everything. And it's sort of easy for the generation of my parents and grandparents to look at my generation and say, well, they should stop whinging because we haven't all got it that good. It's just a stereotype. And I think that rather than dwelling on the past and pitting generations against each other, we really need to focus on the here and now and the problems that we have with young people's finances. And we need to think about some solutions to those problems. So the way that I see the finances of young people, which, by the way, is, I think, the most integral part of that debate. I mean, there are many brilliant reasons for being young now. I mean, look at the iWatch and the iPhone 6 that have just been announced. We've got some amazing technology, and we live in a globalised world, and there are amazing opportunities for young people now. But really, it's people's finances that I'm going to focus on today, of course, which I think is the worst thing about being a young person now. So I think the four pillars of financial security that everybody needs to be truly financially secure are education, jobs, housing, and pensions. And I've presented these in that order quite deliberately, because I think that is the order that people think about these pillars, maybe without realising it. But it doesn't mean that either of them are less important than the other. Now, I believe that all four of these pillars are crumbling, and that's why we are having problems, and that's why these problems could create permanent damage to the UK economy. I'll talk through these four pillars, and I'll start with education. I think one of the problems with the UK education system today is that it seems like it's getting more disconnected from the real world. At one end of the spectrum, we have 40% of low-achieving GCSE pupils, those who fail to achieve 5A starter C grades. 40% of these people expect to end up on benefits. And I think that's pretty bleak, actually. I think once upon a time, people who didn't do so well at school would leave school confident in the knowledge that they could go on to a job in a trade industry, or they could go into retail, and they would never be rich, but they could earn a decent living from that and they could support themselves. But I think that now that expectation is drying up. At the other end of the spectrum, half of graduates are failing to get graduate jobs 5 years after leaving university. And I think that shows a real disconnect between the quality of university courses and the type of university courses that are on offer, and the actual jobs in the real world that people, let's face it, have gone to university to try and get. I think it's nearly 50% of school leavers now are going to university. And let's not forget that student loans are now higher than they have ever been in the UK. On the new post-2012 style student loans, the average student debt is now £45,000. And that is a serious amount of money for any graduate to be paying, let alone those graduates who are doing these Mickey Mouse courses and who really shouldn't, have no proper guidance as to what they're doing. Unfortunately, in a lot of state schools around the country, career services funding is drying up, and people without educated parents, or even maybe some with educated parents, really don't have enough information at their fingertips to show whether this degree that will be one of the biggest investments they will ever make in their life is actually going to be worth it for them. £45,000, that's like having a mortgage. £45,000 debt, that is money that you're not putting in your pension to buy yourself security in later life. We should not ignore this, even though most, the government is now predicting that most won't pay it back in full. The fact is that a lot of people will pay it back. And also, the cost of student living is now so high that most students require parental help to actually get through those 3 years at university. And that, to me, that could hinder social mobility, because people from families without wealthy parents would actually be discouraged from going. The cost of student accommodation, I think the average is between £100 and £150 a week. And that's a serious amount of money, and unfortunately, the maintenance loans don't cover it. I've got some stats here. For the pre-2012 student loans. In 1990, the average graduate had £0 and £0 of student loan, and in fact, a lot of them actually got government grants to help them at university. I'm in this category. I have a student loan, pre-2012 student loan. The average debt is £17,000 a year. And the number of graduates in highly skilled jobs, meanwhile, has actually decreased, showing that it is harder for graduates to actually secure jobs, even though they're paying more to get these degrees. And I can honestly say that I think if I was an 18-year-old deciding whether to go to university now, I would try my damn hardest to get an apprenticeship. I think I would do anything to avoid getting myself on a course that might not lead anywhere and getting myself in that much debt. So, jobs. Now, clearly, young people today have been in a difficult position for one very big reason, and that is the recession. It was one of the worst recessions for a century. So it's, that's hit everybody hard. But 60% of all unemployed people in the UK are aged under 35, showing that actually the unemployment has affected young people worse. And that might be because they lack experience. Time and time again, young people are applying for jobs and they are being told, no, sorry, you have no experience. You need experience to get experience. So that's tough. Meanwhile, in real terms, under 30s have also suffered a 13% pay cut over the past decade. And that's made things even tougher for them. So even if they are one of the lucky ones who's managed to get themselves a job, their pay is likely to be lower than it would have been a decade ago. And if you put that against rising inflation in living costs such as food, energy, You can see that their living standards are probably a lot lower than they would have been a few years ago. And this definitely has a trickle-down effect on their savings as well. If you take 20-somethings who earn less than the median salary, a third of them have less than £1,000 in the bank. And that is less than the average person would need to secure a deposit on a rental property, let alone sort of saving up a bigger deposit to buy a property. They can't even afford the deposit to rent a place. All of this is worsened, actually, by 100,000 unpaid internships that are being undertaken every year. That's not included in the roughly 800,000 young people who are unemployed. So that's a figure that's not included in that. And again, that's the unpaid internships. I know people who've interned in creative industries for up to 2 years. Their parents have been paying their rent. They've been sort of living off bread and water, that kind of thing. That's fine. That's their choice to do it if they want to go into those creative industries. But it is a shame for those creative industries that so many people who would like to do that but don't have the parents to pay the rent simply can't, and they'll have to go off and do something else. The other challenge that young people are facing in the job market is an ageing population. Obviously, things are not so rosy for people approaching retirement age. There's a lot of people out there with very, very measly pension packages. And a lot more of those people are being encouraged to stay in the workforce. The government has hired Ros Altman as an older workers' champion. But there's no person out there for young people to champion their working rights. So I think that the emphasis is being taken away from young people in the workplace. Housing is probably... This is probably the topic that young people care about the most. This is right at the centre of their thinking and of their hearts. They are desperately struggling to get on the housing ladder for obvious reasons. A 25-year-old today is half as likely to own a home as someone of the same age 2 decades ago. And you only have to, you know, you look at any newspaper on any day and there's probably a story about how ridiculous house prices in the UK have become, particularly in London and the South East. And I think all this housing market thing has really caused the UK housing market to morph into what I would describe as a generational hoover. What we have is a whole sea of younger people without the capital behind them to buy a place, without the wages to be able to get a mortgage. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have older people with some capital sat there, and particularly next year when the new pensions freedoms come in, we will see a lot of older people have access to a huge lump of cash. And what are they going to do? I think they're going to go and buy the only asset they really know, and that, to, in their knowledge, has always gone up, is property. And this, the buy-to-let mortgages are at an all-time high. You know, when somebody goes out to buy a buy-to-let property, they're taking rent off a young person who can't afford to buy a house. So to me, it's emphasising the generational transfer of wealth. And one of the symptoms of this is that a quarter of 20 to 35-year-olds are now living with their parents. And the estimates show that by 2020, this figure will have doubled. Which I think is quite shocking and probably quite horrifying to a lot of parents out there. I don't think all parents would like to have their children living at home. And I don't think that most young people would like to live at home either. There was an article in the Daily Telegraph just yesterday saying that 500,000 young people want to live at home because of their home comfort. And that's perfectly fine if the parent wants to provide that and if the child wants to lap that up. But let's not pretend that everyone's in that situation. Just some more stats for you here. I think probably the most shocking one is the average first-time buyer house price to wages ratio. This is for 22 to 29-year-old wages, by the way. That has doubled in the last 20 years, and making it very difficult for young people to actually buy a home. Pensions. This is the final pillar, and I think it's probably the one that young people care about the least. I don't think they're that bothered about this one. But I think I care about this one. because I think this is probably the most explosive and harmful one. The state pension is a huge worry for young people. The per taxpayer cost of it is going to quadruple by 2050. And that will be when we are about to retire. Or maybe not. Maybe we won't be retiring at all. The latest evidence basically shows that the state pension is definitely going to diminish in value by the time young people reach that age. If it, you know, a lot of experts are questioning whether it will be there at all. So that's a huge worry for young people who will be fitting the bill. They will be footing the bill for older people, and they will risk, in doing that, they will risk their own retirement. But also, the pensions that they are receiving through their workplaces have obviously become less generous. Now, I think that's something that needed to happen, and I wouldn't criticise that. The gold-plated defined benefit schemes that somebody in the 1970s or the 1980s would have been opted in like that. They wouldn't have had to pay anything themselves. Those sorts of schemes were not sustainable. They have died a death. But they haven't gone away, and they are still draining company resources across the country. I saw some Barnett Waddingham research that really caught my eye. It showed that 37p out of every pound that UK PLC is spending on pensions is going into funding the black holes in these DB schemes. Not the whole DB schemes, just the black holes, just the deficits. And I think that's pretty worrying, because that's a problem that's not going away. The government has admitted that the auto-enrolment pensions, which young people are being enrolled into today and going forward, they are going to be inadequate to provide young people with a decent retirement. So I really think we need to see some reform. Even though there has been a lot of great reform in this area, there's still a lot of work to be done in pensions. Just a little stat there as well, making it more difficult for young people to save money. If you look at the average savings rate from 20 years ago, that is now way below inflation. So that actually makes it more difficult for young people who want, if they maybe want to save alongside their pension, it's more difficult. So what's the overall effect of all of this? I think, taking all of this into account, I think there is an undeniable erosion of young people's financial security. I think, you know, many young people will, you know, they maybe will go through life and they won't want for anything, they will be okay. But I think that it is eroding away, and I think ordinary people today are not in a great position if they want all four pillars and they want to really feel that they are financially secure. If all of this continues, I think we do risk two things, and those are political and financial disenfranchisement. I think if you look at the 2010 election, Nick Clegg promised young people that tuition fees would not rise to £9,000. Young people went out and voted, and Nick Clegg proceeded to feather his own nest, and he scrapped that. And I think there are a lot of people that, I mean, that just one example has led to a lot of young people just saying, well, we can't be bothered to vote because it doesn't really mean anything. We can't change anything. We don't trust them. And what I mean by a financial disconnect is people saying, well, these goals are just so high. We, you know, we will never be able to retire comfortably, and we will never be able to afford that house. So why would we want to spend 20 years not having anything that we want to do that? No, we'll just sort of live for the here and now, and we won't worry about that. We'll just bury our heads in the sand. And I think if that continues, the UK economy could suffer permanent damage. I don't think it's realistic for us to expect a return to the past, and how great things have been at times for certain groups of people in the past. I think that we need to look at what we have now and think, how can we use the resources we have in the best way possible? I think we need some realism here, and I think we need to sort of take the emotion out of the intergenerational strife thing. But I think we do urgently need some more policies for the young, for obvious reasons, i.e. that they don't vote. I think that there has been a severe lack of policies that would help young people in the UK. And I'm just going to quickly go over some of the ones that I have already written about in my columns. I think we really need a higher education overhaul. I think universities need to be taken to town on the value for money of courses being offered. And I think that urgently some proper guidance needs to go into schools to show people exactly what they, you know, what they could be doing, and really preventing them from being conned by the government, wasting their money on absolutely useless degrees and getting themselves into a lifetime of debt just to do that, because they think it's the only option and they don't have the confidence to say, you know what, I don't need a degree, I could go and work my way up in a company. They need the confidence to do that, but they won't get that just from themselves. I think, obviously, young people aren't saving because their wages are dwindling and living costs are pretty high at the moment. But I really think the UK could benefit from a youth savings scheme. In the budget, the government announced a granny bond for over 65s. They said that they would allow over 65s to invest up to 10 grand in a high interest savings account, very secure money. And I think that young people would really benefit from that too. You know, they are the ones that need to, they need to establish an emergency fund for themselves. They need to, you know, save money if they want a wedding or a car or a house or any of the things that people, you know, young adults that are trying to achieve. And that would be a lot more, that would be a lot easier if there were such a scheme as that, and actually it wouldn't cost the government very much. Obviously more affordable houses, you know, this is something that a lot of people are banging on about, and I think the government is going some way to address this now, but I think they could get more creative about this. I think they need, what they need to do is knock on the doors of some of the most talented architects in the UK, if not the world, get their help. I think they could create some really brilliant projects rather than just shoving people in badly designed rabbit hutches. And I think that they need to create some wonderful accommodation on the cheap and reserve it just for young people. Better renting conditions as well. I think one of the things that really, really affects the well-being and the finances of ordinary young people is renting and how difficult it is to, you know, come up with a deposit, and always the fear of losing a deposit. Now, clearly, you know, there are difficulties for landlords as well, but I think we could strike a better balance between really helping young people who are feeling quite financially insecure by giving them some better renting conditions. And finally, I think, as I said, there's been a lot of reform in pensions, but I think this, we've still got so far to go on making pensions more transparent in terms of the fees, and also more efficient. The government has introduced a 0.75% fee cap on pensions, but that is useless, because anybody who knows sort of anything about investment knows that if you're paying 0.75% just for an institutional tracker fund, you are being ripped off. And the average person on the street has absolutely no idea about that, let alone the hidden fees, which pension firms are still not obligated to tell people about. So more work needed in that area too. I don't think that even if all young people went out and voted in the next general election or any election, that it would be enough to signal to the next government that it might be worth implementing some of these policies and really seriously creating some policies that would help young people. I'm convinced that the only way it will happen is that if the older generation is prepared to stick their neck out and vote for the young. And I think actually, judging by a lot of the correspondence I've had with FT readers from the back of my columns, I think that a lot of older voters are prepared to do that. I just think the politicians need to realise that. So thanks for listening, and very happy to take any questions.